This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey everybody, welcome to another edition of the MLB Pipeline Podcast. I'm Jason Ratliff, here with Jim Callis and Jonathan Mayo, and our special guest, Shohei Ohtani. No, not really. Oh, you did get him.
I got him. He's a few minutes late. He'll be here. He'll be here in about 10 minutes.
He's deferring his appearance on our show until a later date. So that happened. Seems like people are talking about that. So we have to. We can't not talk about Ohtani. He's not obviously a prospect. Barely ever was, but we did claim him for a while. Our top 100 draft prospects list will be dropping almost in a matter of hours now, as we record on Tuesday. That thing's coming out Wednesday night, Thursday morning. You'll be able to check it out on MLB.com/pipeline, MLB.com/draft. It'll be all over the site, the 2024 draft class. So we're going to talk, give you a little preview of that without giving away too much. And then we're going to talk about some recent trades that went down. I guess the biggest news at the winter meetings last week, we were waiting for a couple of things. We're waiting for to find out where Ohtani was going, and we're waiting for the Juan Soto trade. That happened with the Padres sending Juan Soto to the Yankees, a couple of prospects involved there, and Randy Vasquez and Drew Thorpe. We'll talk about that deal. We'll talk about another deal that the Yankees were involved in and was also related to Shohei Ohtani, as the Dodgers had to clear some 40-man space, traded Victor Gonzalez and Yorbit Vivas to the Yankees for Trey Sweeney. Break that down. And, another big thing last week at the winter meetings was the Rule 5 draft. John will give us some picks to click, picks to stick. Stick, I guess. Right? I guess they probably need to click in order to stick these picks. All right. And we'll wrap up by answering a question from the mailbag. All right, Ohtani. We had him back in 2018 when he came over from Japan. He qualified for our rankings lists, and so he was the number one prospect on the 2018 preseason top 100 prospects list. Much to Jim's chagrin. Jim was not a believer.
I know. It was not chagrin. It was not chagrin. It's funny. I looked at that clip. It was like funny where I was crazy. I was just stumping for Ronald Acuna.
No, you were stumping for Vlad.
The crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, it was Vlad. You're right. Well, I feel good about that too. I was putting Vlad in the Hall of Fame with his dad. But you know, it's funny. I still think about how I had to write the Ohtani scouting report, and it because we do this every once in a while. We'll write the scouting report for like a major guy when we know he's coming over, so it can go up immediately. And you try not to go crazy. Like I think Jonathan, and I think I may be slightly more generous on grades than you, but we both try to not be throwing sevens and eights all over the place. But can I read my scouting grades? Which sounded ridiculous right in this.
Can you do it in like a dramatic voiceover voice?
Yes. Would you like hitting or pitching first? Okay, here we go. Hit 50, power 70, run 65, arm 80, field 50. And that's like a pretty good report. I mean, pretty like strong report, and it was light. and I'm not going to do the pitching dramatically, but I went 80 fastball, 65 slider, 50 curve, 65 splitter, 50 change, 50 control. I went 70 as a pitcher and 60 as a hitter, and I feel like I was light on him, which is kind of funny to think about. But you know what else is funny to think about? Do you remember when he came over here and he struggled, much like a different type of player like Ichiro, and you had everybody like, oh, man, I don't know if this is really going to work. Like, what's all the fuss about? Like, I don't know how good this guy is. And he's only the best baseball player ever because nobody's done what he's done. But yeah, so I guess I should have thrown out more sevens and eights, I guess.
I mean, you do like kind of going crazy on those grades. You know, Jason Dominguez is Mickey Mantle. And
well, that wasn't my comp. I was just reporting what others said. So. And don't sell him short. He's a combination of Mickey Mantle, Bo Jackson, and Mike Trout.
Oh, you didn't let me finish. But yes. But yeah, no, Otani, we've never seen anything like it. And I'd be very curious to see what happens, you know, if and when he gets back to the mound, and that contract and the deferrals and all that. It has been the talk of everything. Probably what, Jason, from the winter meetings when we were still there, and they were sort of like, is it going to happen when we're still there? And like, is it going to happen the next day? Is he on a plane? Is he, you know, and it's just, he has captured the attention of the baseball world for quite some time until he finally made the decision to sign with the Dodgers, I guess partially because of our farm system ranking. So there you have it. We deserve some credit. You're welcome, Dodgers.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, we're all awaiting our 1/700th cut from Mr. Otani. Well, when he met with the Dodgers, he was inquiring about the strength of their farm system, and I believe it was Tom Verducci's story that the lead of his story was talking about the fact that, well, the Dodgers farm system was ranked by MLB Pipeline as the, what was it, fifth, sixth, compared to the more middle of the pack Blue Jays farm. So clearly the deciding factor. And when Shohei joins us here in what, about 5 minutes, we'll ask him about our cuts. Deferred. All right, let's move on to our first non-Shohei topic. The top 100 draft prospects list for 2024 is coming your way very soon. In fact, depending on when you're listening to this, might be out already. We put this out in December each year for the following year. We put out a top 100, then we expand it in April to 150, in May to 200, and in June to 250. So this is our first version. It'll be interesting to see how it evolves over time. And I have a feeling that this one might, I think it's going to have more changes between now and the final product in June than last year's at the top. Is that safe to say?
I think I would say that there's a chance for there to be more changes at the top. Although, you know, if you look at last year's, top five at this time, it was Dylan Cruz, Chase Dolander, Wyatt Langford, Paul Skenes, and Jacob Gonzalez. And so that did change somewhat. You know, the high schoolers who were next on the top 10, Max Clark and Walker Jenkins, ended up in the top five to make that ridiculous quintet that we saw go at the top of the draft in July. So I guess it wasn't like a huge, like a marked change. I think this group, because it's uncertain, there's no clear cut top, but there are some guys with track record. It can move, I think, based on how guys perform, especially I think if some of the, it's hitting heavy and without, diving too deep or giving away too many secrets. So if some of the pitchers sort of make steps forward, they could jump up. But I think you're right to an extent, although I think the college bats will probably come out and perform and be in the same kind of neck of the draft rankings. Jim, what do you think?
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I do think it's volatile for a number of reasons. I don't think it's, you know, last year we repeatedly talked about how you had five guys who were legitimate number one picks in any draft. And any of those guys, like if Walker Jenkins, who went fifth among them last year, was in this year's draft, he'd be the clear number one, I think, right now. But you have it's an interesting mix of a lot of the best college bats don't play premium positions. A lot of the better college premium position players have swing and miss or chase issues they're going to have to solve. And a lot of the best pitchers are more extreme than usual, it feels, in terms of stuff versus polish, where you have guys with big time stuff, but a lot of questions about strike throwing and are they a starter reliever? So I do agree 100%. It's going to be very interesting to see how this plays out. You know, we're not going to give away where anybody's ranked quite yet. We'll talk about that next week. But I could see it being a big shakeup, not just the top five, but I could see the top 20 looking a lot different when we start really getting into this next April, May, and June leading up to the July
and
draft.
Without getting into any details, the top of the list is going to be very college heavy, more so than we've seen in quite a while. And I think you'll get a hint of that as we go through the top tools in this year's draft class. Let's start on the hitting side. Let's start with what I guess would you'd probably say is the most important tool, or the one that correlates most closely to rankings, typically the hit tool. Who has the best hit tool in this year's draft class?
That's JJ Weatherholt from West Virginia, Pittsburgh area kid. You know, I'm a homer, so happy to talk about him. But put his name on the map. I mean, he's hit really since he got to West Virginia, but last year he hit .449 to lead all Division I hitters. More walks than strikeouts. Doesn't strike out a lot. 22 strikeouts last year and 268 plate appearances. Had a 1300 OPS. Also hit on the Cape. There's I don't want to say question about impact. We don't know how much power he's going to have. He hit 16 homers at West Virginia last year. That's the one question, I guess, that needs to be answered. But in terms of pure hit tool, the bat-to-ball skills are unbelievable, and he will impact the ball enough that even if it's average power, it's still going to be very good. And kind of see what position he ends up playing. He'll be playing shortstop this year, and that could, you know, raise his profile if he shows that he can play there. But even if he ends up at second base where he played last year, that bat is going to play and, is as one of the best pure bats, I think, that we've had in a while.
Yeah, just a little bit of perspective on the grade, and with the caveat that grades do have varied over the course of the past decade since we've been giving them out. But there have only been 270 hit tools given to a draft prospect in the past decade, and each of them came in the past 2 years, Jamar Johnson, 2022, and Dylan Cruz last year. All right. You guys get soft.
That's it.
Giving these things out willy-nilly. I'd probably get a 65 hit tool if I came out this year. No? All right.
Nah. I'm not going to go above six.
Let's go to the power tool. Who's this year's biggest bopper?
That would be Nick Kurtz of Wake Forest. I mean, he's hit 37 homers in two college seasons. He's slugged 700 at Wake Forest, which interestingly originally recruited him as a left-handed pitcher before he became a first baseman. It's huge raw power at all fields, and it translates in games. He's got, you know, real quick swing, good strength. He's a left-handed hitter. The stroke's designed to launch balls in the air. But he's not one of these one-dimensional guys. Like, I think you could argue he might be the second best hitter in terms of hitting ability in the draft behind JJ Weatherholt. I mean, he has no real weakness. He hits lefties. He hits righties. He's successful against all types of pitching, controls the strike zone, walks more than he strikes out. There's no real holes on, you know, covers the plate well, hits the ball hard all over the ballpark. So, I know we're both Mr. Anti-Comp, but I got a – a Jim Thome comp on Nick Kurtz.
Wow.
Jim Thome with defensive value because he's a good first baseman. So I think the other guy who's up there is since we're talking about Shohei, the college version, college's best two-way player, Jack Caglione at Florida, has comparable raw power, but I think Kurtz is a better hitter and we'll get to a little bit more of it than Caglione will. Caglione led the nation in home runs last year as Florida went to the College World Series finals.
Only the fourth 65 power grade that's been given out since 2015. Off the top of your head, you guys remember?
Jack Caglione got one of them.
Oh, we're talking, well.
Prior to this year?
Sorry.
Prior to this year.
Spencer Torkelson.
Torkelson is one.
Yeah, I would have guessed that.
There was one last year.
Wyatt Langford.
And 2022 Jacob Berry.
Oof, I was a little high on
that. All right, let's go arm. No. Let's go run.
Yeah, I figured we'd...
I'm tired. I don't want to go run.
Very nicely done. So I'll go run. We all know how much I love to run. But Austin Overton at Southern Cal is the guy who has stood out the most. Put a 75 on him. There were some scouts who put an 8 on him and kind of tried to find a tiny bit of middle ground. It's splitting hairs a little bit, but the speed is absolutely ridiculous. And he's still learning how to use it. I mean, he stole 16 bases last year, but also had 14 triples for USC. That helped them end up with a 932 OPS. He is definitely a sort of table setter type. There's a little impact in there, but the speed is really the thing. And we'll talk a little bit more about how that speed plays elsewhere in a little bit.
All right, now let's go. Arm, best arm in the 2024 draft class belongs to?
I feel like, Jonathan, in this year's draft, catching is kind of thin, sure. Especially on the high school side. We have one catcher on the top 100 who comes from the prep ranks. That's Cade Aaron Beattie from Tomball, Texas. And, you know, he stands out. He's got a big-time arm. It's plus-plus arm strength. It plays well behind the plate. He also has a lot of raw power. I think he's probably more of a second-round pick than a first-round pick. But when you talk about best arms in this draft for position players, he comes up almost immediately in the discussion. And I don't think there's any question when you look at the catchers in this draft that his arm stands out easily the most. It's a legit plus-plus arm.
All right. First prep player named as we go through the best tools in the draft class. How about the best fielder in the draft class?
Yeah, we'll go back to Austin Overton at Southern Cal. I mean, and it's not just his ability to, you know, outrun mistakes or use that, you know, top of the scale speed. He combines the speed with really good instincts and reads and routes. He's going to play center field for a very, very long time. So, when you have that combination already before he's even entered pro ball, that puts him a little bit ahead. There are some other guys who are interesting, but you know, Jim and I were talking about this earlier this morning. You know, scouts obviously scout defense, but when you have guys at opposite ends of the country, it's a little hard to compare. But I still think that based on the folks that I talked to in California, Overton is clearly the best defender at a premium up the middle position.
All right, we've only given out 370 field grades on the draft top prospects list over the past decade. You guys remember any of them?
I would need a clue,
one,
I think.
There was one over the past, there was one in each of the past 2 years. Both outfielders.
We didn't give it to Max Clark, did we?
No.
No? Oh, Enrique Bradfield got a 70 yep. last year.
And then 2 years ago, I think you should get this one. Very highly ranked, highly drafted. I think maybe you're not thinking of him because we haven't seen him all that much. Center field. Drew Jones.
Oh, there you go. Yep.
And then the other one, not an outfielder. Not a premium defensive position even.
Oh, is it Evan White?
Evan White. Those are the only three. All right, let's move to the mound and start with the fastball. Who owns the hottest heater?
A lot of good fastballs in this draft, but I think the best one belongs to Brody Brecht, the Iowa right-hander. You know, he matched up with Paul Skeens last year, and he threw 101 against Paul Skeens. Skeens beat him when they played LSU. And his fastball-slider combination is comparable to Paul Skeens. He doesn't have nearly the polish, which is why we're not talking about him at the very, very top of the draft right now. But he sits at 96 to 99 miles an hour with his heater. And besides the velocity, it's got explosive running action. It's got much better fastball shape than Skeens. He needs command. And what's interesting is Iowa actually, as good as Brody Breck's fastball is, and I think it's the best fastball in this draft, Iowa had him throw more sliders than fastballs last year, which didn't really help him improve his well below average command of the fastball. But Breck's like when I was talking before about guys who have really good stuff, he's the extreme stuff over polish guy right now. Former wide receiver. He hasn't concentrated on baseball full time until only recently. And he's got so much upside. And he's got the athleticism where you like to think he's going to figure things out.
All right. Curveball, Jonathan.
One of the things that interests me the most about the sort of top curveballs, there were a lot of high school guys to consider, which I like to see because I feel like baseball's become very slider focused. I mean, people have success with it. You do what success, but so William Schmidt from Catholic High School, that's in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. He had made our top 20 high school list back when we did that. It's a true 12-6. It's one of the best overall breaking balls in the entire class. I think it's a combination of, you know, the spin and the characteristics of it, and he can throw it for strikes. And, you know, that's a combination that you don't see very often from anyone, let alone a high schooler. And he's got other stuff. He's up to 95 with his fastball. So he's not just a, you know, kind of a spin monster, but that curveball really helps set him apart.
Okay, I'm going to interject with a quick quiz. Are you ready for a quick quiz?
Let's do it.
Okay. There have been four recent big leaguers who've began their careers at Catholic High and went to LSU before they went to the majors. Two of them pitchers, two position players. Both of the pitchers were first round picks out of LSU. Can you name either pitcher?
You said recent?
In the last 10, 15, you know, I mean, it's not like I'm pulling a guy out from 1957 on you, is what I'm trying to say. One of them just signed for a bunch of money as a free agent.
Stumped.
Has a brother who catches in the big leagues also.
Nola.
Yep. And then Kurt Ainsworth was the other one. Kurt Ainsworth, the Nola brothers, and Josh Smith have all gone from Catholic High to LSU, which is where William Schmidt's committed. I don't think he's going to necessarily get there to the big leagues. So there's my quick quiz for the day.
There you go. All right, and I'll take slider. Are we going to have to come up with a sweeper kind of a grade at some point? Yeah. For now, we have slider. And the best one in the 2024 draft class belongs to whom, Jim?
One of my favorite prospects, Tyson Nabors from Kansas State. He's purely a reliever, but he's the best relief prospect in the draft. Had 86 strikeouts in 48 and two-thirds innings last year. We went 70 slider. He also has 65 fastball, 65 cutter. Like his slider, it's 81 to 84 miles an hour, two plane depth, high spin rates. Like it's going to be, this will be an absurd number. He had an absurd swing and miss rate on his slider, according to Synergy, our good friends at Synergy last year. Without exaggeratedly guessing too high, how high would you think an absurd swing and miss rate would be on a slider? Like 40 is really good.
62%.
Jason?
I was thinking low 60s as well. I'll go over Jonathan and go 63.
Well, that was a very good move because it's 67% swing and miss rate. That means two out of every three sliders Tyson Nabors threw, and when guys swung, they missed. And he's also got like an upper 80s cutter, and his fastball is like 93 to 99 with cut and ride and all kinds of induced vertical break. And that might be his third best pitch. So, you know, I usually like to go with starters for these things. You know, Brody Breck's got a really good slider. Chase Burns, who's moving back in the rotation's got a good slider. But Neighbor's slider, like just watching video of it, I was mesmerized on Synergy the other day when I was writing up his report, just looking at guys swing and miss at these sliders that are just like dropping at the plate. It's ridiculous. I'm very excited. I'll be curious to see where he goes in the draft. We say this every year and it rarely pans out, but I do think this is the type of guy that, you know, maybe like, you don't like to draft relievers too high, but like late second round, a team that has, you know, a contender, this guy could get to the big leagues really, really quick because he throws strikes with all three pitches too.
Let's move on to the best changeup in the class.
And that would be another one of, I think I'm dominating the pitching categories, Jonathan, for whatever reason, as we split the draft, but Drew Beam from Tennessee, who has a chance. I think he's going to wind up going somewhere in the middle of the first round. Changeup is probably his best pitch. It's not the sexiest stuff. It's just he has really good control of solid stuff. We put a six on the changeup. It's his best pitch. It kind of makes everything play up because you can't try to get too aggressive against him or he can make you look really silly. But he just has some of the best feel in this draft, and I think the best changeup kind of give him a slight edge over Illinois high schooler Ryan Sloan, who also has a pretty good changeup too.
All right, and no rest for the weary here, Jim. Best control.
We're going to go best control. We're going to go with Josh Hartle of Wake Forest. And it'll be interesting. You know, I've talked about, you know, Drew Beam is an exception, but I think Hartle's the biggest exception to what I was talking about with Brody Brecht and Chase Burns and some of these guys who have big-time stuff and are trying to figure out the pitching aspect of it. And Josh Hartle's the opposite. I mean, he was a guy who – a lot of teams thought was the best high school lefty in the 2021 draft, but he wanted to go to Wake Forest, so he didn't get drafted. All-American last year, Wake finished third at the College World Series. And the stuff's, you know, pedestrian's probably a little harsh. You know, he's got a plus slider, average fastball, average changeup, solid cutter, but he just has a real easy delivery, and he throws a ton of strikes, you know, moves the ball around. It's not just control, it's command. 140 strikeouts, 24 walks, and 102 innings last year. And he just can really, really pitch. And I want to say, Jonathan, I have not committed. Have you? I haven't committed our list to memory. I don't know if you've committed our list to memory either. I think he's our highest ranked pure pitcher because Caglione's a two-way guy on the draft top 100. So.
No, that's right. And I think that's what's going to be really interesting among the sort of college arm and pitching in general. You mentioned, Brecht and Burns with the pure stuff, and can they show they can start? When you have a guy like Hartle, it's much more floor. Pretty certain he can start in the big leagues, but he doesn't have that sort of top of the rotation frontline starter profile. So it's going to be, it'll be an interesting thing to watch and how those guys are evaluated as the spring season unfolds.
All right. Those are the best tools in the 2024 draft class. The top 100 draft prospects list coming your way. That's dropping on Wednesday night on MLB.com. Check that out. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk trades. That's coming up next on the MLB Pipeline Podcast.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Welcome back to the MLB Pipeline Podcast. Jason Ratliff, Jim Callis, Jonathan Mayo. bad news. We're supposed to be joined by Shohei Ohtani, at least in our minds.
I heard he's on a plane. I heard he's on a plane from LA to Toronto, and that's why he can't join us. He can't join us.
Could and wouldn't pay for the Wi-Fi to join us.
He's deferring so much of his money, he can't spend it on frivolous things like Wi-Fi.
Well, so instead, we're gonna talk about some recent trades, both of which involve the Yankees. Mentioned these earlier. First one, the big Padres-Yankees deal, Juan Soto. We're waiting during the winter meetings to see where Soto was going to go. He goes to the Yankees along with Trent Grisham. The return involved a couple of the Yankees' ranked prospects. Drew Thorpe, who was the Yankees' number 5 prospect, and Randy Vasquez, who was the Yankees' number 13 prospect. Kyle Higashioka, Johnny Brito, and Michael King also involved in the deal. So they get 5 players for Soto and Grisham. What do you guys think of the return here? Only one top 100 prospect in Thorpe. I thought it was funny that early on the trade talks between the two teams were deemed dead because the Yankees reportedly said no deal that involved either Thorpe or King would be considered. It was a non-starter, no go. And then the deal ultimately involves both of them.
Yeah, I mean, look, I mean, it's so much of trades depends about timing too. When the Nationals traded Juan Soto to the Padres, and the Padres had about 2.5 years of control of Juan Soto, they got 5 highly regarded prospects. You know, the Yankees are making this trade at a time when everybody knew the Padres are trying to get out of their arbitration obligation to Juan Soto, which was going to be $30 million plus after, you know, maxing out their payroll. They are trying to cut back some, and they also need to find a bunch of pitching. So, you know, it was hard to kind of thread that needle. You weren't going to get nearly as much talent coming back as they gave up to get him. I mean, I do think Thorpe's a really interesting pickup. He was our MLB pipeline pitching prospect of the year, led the minors in strikeouts, led the minors in strikeout minus walk percentage. I was among the minor league leaders in a whole bunch of categories. And, I think he's a guy we could see in the big leagues next year. You know, he dominated the minors this year, got to Double-A at the end of the year. He's always had very good feel to pitch. He's got a well above average changeup. The Yankees helped him upgrade his slider. You know, his fastball is more of a command pitch than a stuff pitch, but you know, he's interesting. I mean, I think he's somebody who can help their pitching next year. I know a lot of teams were interested in Mike King as kind of a sleeper who could be a really effective starter for the Padres next year. So, you know, that could be 2 starters. You know, Brito's a depth arm. Higashioka is a veteran catcher, and you know, Randy Vasquez is still a prospect, but he's got big league experience. Kind of on the fence. Is he a reliever? Is he a starter? He's more stuff over command, really good breaking stuff, solid fastball. Control command comes and goes a little bit. He's not real big, so he might be more of a reliever. But, I mean, this is what the Padres set out to do. They had to get rid – they felt like they had to get rid of Juan Soto's contract. You can debate that, whether or not that was true. But they had to find some pitching and open up some money for some pitching. And I think they did that with this trade. Like, I don't know how many teams were looking, as good as Juan Soto is, were looking to take on that kind of salary and arbitration. You know, he's probably going to enter the free agent market before you know if he's going to re-sign with your team going forward. And the Yankees do a wonderful job of developing pitchers, and you know, usually not super high picks either. And I think the Yankees are Yankees. They can afford Juan Soto, even if it's just for a year, and they have the pitching depth to give up.
I think there are a couple of things, and a lot of people felt, the Yankees gave up way too much for this. I don't necessarily see it that way, even though I tend to, just because of what we do, I think it's an occupational hazard where you pause when prospects get traded. Not that there were that many prospects. I think there are a couple of things that sort of made me think that this wasn't like that huge of an overpay. And I'm putting aside the fact that, you know, Juan Soto's 25 and really, really good. And I know it's for 1 year of control right now. One, you know, Drew Thorpe got shelved at the end of the year, so there's a little concern for me, like, about health. Now, it's not that I don't think he's a talented pitcher. I think he's likely going to be fine, but I'm sure the physicals all, you know, were handed over and things of that nature. But that makes me pause just a little bit. And the other arms, like, they're fine. And I know there are a lot of people felt, because the Yankees lost a bunch of arms in the Rule 5 also, that suddenly their system is pitching barren. They always have the ability to go and get pitching when they need to. The other thing that I think comes into play is that this gives the Yankees basically a year to convince Juan Soto that New York is where he should stay forever. And I'm not saying that they're going to sign him to an extension during the year, but let's say the Yankees go out and have a good year and he loves being in New York and the attention and endorsement possibilities that he wasn't necessarily getting, you know, in San Diego, whatever it may be, they can kind of give him the marketing pitch for the entirety of the season. And I think that gives them an advantage if they decide that they want to sign Juan Soto long-term after this year. And I don't want to overstate how important that is, but I do think that's something worth paying for if that's a road they want to go down.
That was the big Juan Soto deal. And then the other huge news that transpired over the past week was, of course, the Shohei Ohtani signing. And that led to another trade that involved the Yankees, because the Dodgers needed to clear up a couple 40-man spots. And to do so, they traded Yorbit Vivas, infield prospect, and left-hander Victor Gonzalez to the Yankees for Trey Sweeney, who's not on the 40-man roster. So they opened up the space like that. And this was a pretty interesting deal prospect-wise, because you had a couple of infielders. Vivas was the Dodgers' number 10 prospect. Sweeney was number 8. These are, of course, on the year-end rankings. So these rankings would have changed going into next year. But in Sweeney, the Dodgers get Yankees' first-round pick from 2021. And in Vivas, this is a guy who just doesn't swing and miss, and has ranked among MILB leaders in strikeout rate over the past few seasons. Both infielders, kind of an interesting deal there. What'd you make of it, Jim?
Yeah, I thought it was Brian Cashman being opportunistic again, like he was with the Juan Soto trade. I don't think this is a trade that the Dodgers make if they didn't need a couple 40-man roster spots. I'm not saying it's one-sided, but I just don't think they would have made the trade. You know, Gonzalez, I think, is a useful reliever for the Yankees, and I think Vivas has more prospect value than Trey Sweeney, although he's on the 40-man, and that was a liability for the Dodgers. I mean, it's kind of like a Luis Arraez profile. I'm not saying he's going to win a batting title, but it's like extreme contact, overpower. There's a little bit of sneaky pop. He might be 10, 12, 15 home run guy, draw some walks. He's just an okay defender, fringy runner, fringy arm. He's played some third, where that's a stretch with his arm. Second's his primary position. You know, interesting guy. Like it's definitely hit over impact, and it's kind of a one tool profile. But like you were saying earlier in the podcast, Jason, I mean, that's the tool that often depends on whether you play in the big leagues or how much you play is your ability to hit, and he can hit. You know, Sweeney's like, I'm not that the Yankees don't have a good development program, but like, I just think the Dodgers as the best organization in terms of helping players maximize their talent. And I'll be curious to see what they do with Trey Sweeney, who was a first round pick out of Eastern Illinois 2 years ago. I thought it was more hit than power. It's kind of a odd looking swing, but he barrels balls. I thought it was hit over power, and he's been more power over hit. He's only hit 248 in 3 years in pro ball or 2+ years in pro ball, 36 homers in 243 games. he's played shortstop. I think he's more of a third baseman, maybe a second baseman long run. But I'm curious to see if the Dodgers can maybe help him get going a little bit more at the plate and find some more upside that the Yankees weren't able to do.
Jim, Shohei already signed with the Dodgers. You don't have to keep selling.
I'm all frazzled now. There you go. See, we're right over my head. Like I have draft fever, which is both like
crickets on that one.
Draft fever, both carrying me, but then also like I'm exhausted with draft fever. So I was like, what? I didn't mention Shohei's name. What are you talking about? Like, so anyway, thank you for explaining the joke should not have required explanation. That's on me.
And Jim, you're just getting over your really bad case of Rule 5 draft fever that you had last week. So we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we'll look at which Rule 5 picks have the best chance to stick in the big leagues, and we'll answer a question from the mailbag that's coming up next on the MLB.
It's blazing hot outside. You get in your car to turn on the AC to get cold air pumping, but it blows hot air out. This issue is commonly caused by low refrigerant due to leaks in the AC system. You want an easy, all-in-one solution that will restore the cold air in no time. AC Pro Recharge Kits. Make restoring cold air easy for even those with zero DIY experience in less than 10 minutes. Save time and money versus going to a shop by picking up an AC Pro Recharge Kit today. Be a pro with AC Pro.
Pipeline Podcast. Welcome back to the MLB Pipeline Podcast. Jim Callis, Jonathan Mayo, I'm Jason Ratliff. Time to talk Rule 5 Draft. That happened last week. Not a whole lot of activity on the Major League side. Only 10 players taken, the fewest since 2013, if I'm not mistaken.
That's right.
And a lot of activity on the Minor League side, 63 players taken. But we're going to go through the MLB phase, and Jim and Jonathan, out of the 10 players selected, are going to choose one each that they think is most likely to stick. A very quick rundown. The A's took right-hander Mitch Spence from the Yankees. Royals took another Yankees right-hander, Matt Sauer. The Rockies took Anthony Molina from the Rays. The White Sox took Shane Drohan from the Red Sox. Nassim Nunez, the first non-pitcher to go, went to the Nationals from Miami. Cardinals took right-hander Ryan Fernandez from Boston. The Mets took right-hander Justin Slayton. Also, they traded him to Boston then. Immediately after for Ryan Ammons. Guardians took third baseman Davison De Los Santos, who was the D-backs' number 5 ranked prospect. Padres took right-hander Stephen Kolek from Seattle, and the Rangers took right-hander Carson Coleman from the Yankees. Theme there, a lot of right-handers. Picks to click, picks to stick. What did we say during the break? Who did we say is going first here, Jonathan?
Jim has the first
pick. Oh, you seeding the first pick.
Well, it's really, we're picking one guy, but
I don't know. Serpentine. No, who do you guys have me taking in my mock, in your mock draft?
I think you tried to tip us off during the break by talking about Carson Coleman.
No, he said his tease was that we would never predict.
No, I said, I think it'll surprise you. I didn't say never predict.
I think you're going to pick Nassim Nunez.
You're 100% wrong, because after writing about Nassim Nunez on the Marlins list for years, I think he's a wonderful defender and base runner. I do not see how he can hit to stick in the big leagues. But anyway, I'm going
to
take.
I tried to pick the most surprising.
Now that, you're ahead. Right. You're right. That was good. I would have that based on my skepticism about Nassim Nunez's bat, that would have been a huge surprise. Good call. I'm going to go with Ryan Fernandez, who the Cardinals took from the Red Sox. And, you know, he kind of fits a profile of guys who I think are easier to stick. He's a reliever. He's been in AAA. He actually throws a decent amount of strikes. He got hit at Worcester. He had an issue giving up too many home runs. But, you know, he's got the stuff to succeed, I think. He sits in the mid-90s. It's more velocity of the movement, so he's going to have to locate a little bit better. But he's got an upper 80s slider, low 90s cutter. It's power all the way. He throws enough strikes. And so anyway, he's my pick to stick is Ryan Fernandez with the Cardinals. I will go hit reliever.
All right. And Jim, who do you have Jonathan taking in your mock?
I think he's going to go with Mitch Spence, but we'll see.
You are correct. I'm just picking right off the top. it has as much to do with the A's roster as it does any belief in Mitch Spence. I think, by the way, that Mitch Spence is good. You know, the stuff is, you know, average, really, in the end, but he's proven to be very, very durable. You know, led the minor leagues in innings with 163. He did it in AAA. Misses a decent amount of bats. Of the arms taken, he is the one who I feel has the chance to start and has more of a starting pitching profile anyway. I think you could put him in the pen and the stuff might tick up a little bit. You know, I know the Royals said that they may eventually give Matt Sauer a chance to start down the road, maybe kind of like what they did with Brad Keller successfully when they took him a few years back. But I think that Spence's success and durability in AAA combined with the A's need for pitching, I think Spence is going to end up in that rotation to start the year. Last year they took Ryan Noda and he played pretty much every day, you know, first base DH. And I think Spence is going to get every opportunity to stick in that rotation over the course of the year. And you know, might surprise some people once given that opportunity. So I thought, you know, obviously Rule 5 isn't all about ceiling. Matt Sauer might have more ceiling. The pure stuff is better. I think Mitch Spence has a better chance of sticking on that staff next
year. All right, there you go. Jim and Jonathan's picks to stick. Rule 5 picks to stick. All right, let's answer a question from the mailbag. This comes from Matthew at Juan Was a Good Boy, is his handle on Twitter. Asks, if teams redid last year's draft today, would the first five picks change? And does that mean anything? That's a fun question.
I'm going to let Jonathan go first because I tackled this. I did the top 10 picks in a pipeline inbox a couple, 6-8 weeks ago. I will set it up by recapping last year's top five picks. And then Jonathan, you can take first crack at it. You had the Pirates taking Paul Skeens, Nationals falling with Dylan Cruz, both out of LSU. The Tigers took high school outfielder Max Clark at 3. The Rangers took Florida outfielder Wyatt Langford at 4. And then the Twins grabbed Walker Jenkins, high school outfielder, at number 5. So that was your top 5. So, Jonathan, if we're redoing the draft today, and I think we should look at it like the teams, you know, the teams making the picks also, not necessarily just, you know, straight performance. How would you think the top 5 picks would play out?
Yeah, I think that's what makes it interesting. I think the top 2 stay exactly the same. Skeens and Cruz go 1 and 2. I don't think that changes at all. I think the one place, and this is all with the caveat that you don't want to look too much into what happened in one summer of pro baseball. I think 3 is the first spot where you could say you could change things. I think if I were to mix things up, I'd go Wyatt Langford 3, Walker Jenkins 4, Max Clark 5. That said, you know, one of the things you have to take into account is the Tigers saved a little bit of money on Max Clark. And I'm still a big believer in his tools. He just didn't have quite as strong an overall debut summer. I mean, Wyatt Langford made it up to AAA and Jenkins hit even when he got to full season ball. But they were able to sign Kevin McGonigal and Paul Wilson for well over slot deals, largely because, and then Carson Rucker, they went over slot with 2. That's all in the top 4 rounds. Some of that came because of the money they saved for Max Clark. So I don't know that they would do things differently, but if you're looking at how they performed, maybe that's how I would flip them around.
That's how I did it as well. And, you know, Wyatt Langford only cost $300,000 more than Max Clark.
Right.
And maybe he would have
cost. They may have been able to do it anyway.
He may have cost more had he gone 3 as opposed to 4 because, you know, the slots start to drop off. So he had a little less leverage going 4 versus 3. You know, they could have taken, I guess, some money savers in rounds 9 and 10 and made it work that way maybe. But
sure.
I was with you 100%. Like the interesting one for me and Jonathan, I mean, and we tend to get, I think, relatively a little bit more attached to the guys in our portion of the draft than the guys we aren't talking about all the time. But you repeatedly said last year, you know, Wyatt Langford's really, really good. He might be better than Dylan Crews, even though Dylan Crews is a little bit more famous. And you might be right. I mean, the fun thing with him is, you know, I think we could see Skeens and Crews and Langford all in the big leagues next year. The difference is Langford would be joining the defending World Series champions. Like, it's a good team. They have less opportunity. And he's really, really good. You know, he tore up pro ball. I'm going to have, once we get done with the draft top 100 and start thinking about top 100 and team top 30s, I think about when I'm doing the Rangers list, you take Evan Carter, do you take Wyatt Langford? It's a tough call. Yeah, I mean, we may look back and when we do this list, I mean, if we got asked the same question 3 years from now, Wyatt Langford may be the best player in the draft, which you repeatedly said last year, Jonathan. You were, I don't know if you were pounding the table, but you were your fingers on the table for Wyatt Langford.
I was strongly suggesting that he's better than people realized. And I think the one thing that, in addition to you're pointing out that the Tigers may have been able to do the same kind of using the draft bonus pool, even if they took Langford, is that, you know, the Tigers need some help in the big leagues now, and Langford will get there faster.
Yep.
I would have said that before we saw what he did, you know, during his debut, but certainly now in retrospect, after that first summer, Wyatt Langford could be in the Tigers opening day lineup had they gone that route.
All right. We have a late mailbag entry. This comes from Jason R. in Brooklyn, who asks, if teams redid last year's draft today, who would go number six? Or who would you guys take at number six, knowing what we know now?
Oh. Well, Jim, you did this, right?
Oh, yeah, I guess I did. How about that? Because I went 10 deep. Well, yeah, but I think I factored in teams a little bit. Yeah, it's there's three guys. There's three guys you could go with here. I will accept three answers. I will accept four answers here, Jonathan.
Do you have yours set,
I don't think
Jonathan?
It's as clear cut. Well, yeah. Well, I have.
Do I have mine set? You just asked the question 5 seconds ago.
Yeah, I know.
Well, because he answered this
a month ago.
I don't want you to be swayed by Jim's answer here.
I'm going to let Jonathan go first again. I think I think the first five guys, like we've said a million times, we're clearly
yeah. That's why
five.
I want to know number six.
That's why Jason R. is asking this question. No, he's not on X. He's not on X. Like he sent this question in via snail mail or something. But it's interesting here.
I think that I might say so. The A's took Jacob Wilson six, and I still think that that would be a perfectly acceptable selection. Man, I don't know who else I would put up there. I mean, Rhett Lauder went seven. Because the thing is, the pitchers didn't really pitch much. What, Hurston Waldrop you could put up there maybe? I'm just doing that's solely based on performance. Personally, I'd take Noble Meyer.
Okay.
That's who I would
take. Who was
take.
Ranked number eight in our top 250.
Yeah. You know I like the high school arms more than
Jim, I'm gonna guess you stick with Lauder, who was ranked number six.
I did just because I think there's huge value there as a high floor guy who can start in the big leagues very quickly. Like, you know, it's tough though because like the rest of my top 10, I went Kyle Teal, Matt Shaw, Chase Dolander, Aiden Miller, but it's really muddled.
It's a good top 10.
After you get past the first five. There's a lot of candidates. That's why I thought it was a cool question.
You didn't pick the guy who's already been in the big leagues.
I did not pick Nolan Shanwell. I like Nolan Shanwell, but I think there's other. I think other guys are going to have better careers and more value.
I think that's fair.
All right. Good question from Matthew. Thanks very much for sending that, and thanks to everybody
and Jason R.
That's going to do it for this week's episode of the MLB Pipeline Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts so you don't miss an episode. If you're enjoying the show or have any suggestions, leave us a rating and a review. Thanks for listening. See you next week.